Welcome to the Apocalypse Podcast, everyone. I'm Steve, and he's
Larry Van Beek.
You know, only 1 week we got the Dr. Lawrence Van Beek, but that's okay. We're going to take it. We're going to be proud of it. We're going to wear that badge of honor. Hey, good to see you, my friend. They can't see you, but I can see you. So that's too bad for you. Too bad for you, folks, because I get to see him in the flesh.
Just
the face. And yeah. And really, it's just the top third of his face. But you know, it's a wonderful look from here. And hey, we're going to talk about the ninth chapter of Revelation this week. And we've got a fifth and sixth angel blowing their trumpets. So, you know, there's some awesome imagery that we're going to see that hopefully Larry can give us some insight in. Well, actually, I know he's going to give us some insight in. So I don't have to be hopeful. I can know. Right? I can know. So, Bud, do you want me to just read maybe from 1 to 6? How far do you want me to go down?
Yeah, let's do 1 to 6. And today we're going to be talking about, as Steve said, the fifth angel and the sixth angel blowing their trumpet. And remember from last week, these are the woes. So last week we did the first four, which had mostly to do with nature, remember? And there was, it had an effect on people. The wormwood did kill people, but the main effect was on nature. And now the effect is going to be on people specifically. Mm. These are the two woes. It says three woes, but you only get two of them. And then the last woe, of course, is the end of time. And you don't get that for a chapter and a half until 11:7.
Right. Okay. So. Okay. No, good introduction to that, Larry. And folks, you know, like I tried to introduce, there's a hang of a lot of symbolism, I have a feeling, in this, but we'll let Larry walk us through it. So here we are, Revelation 9. We're reading out of the ESV again. I'm starting at verse 1. I'll read down to the end of verse 6. And the fifth angel blew his trumpet, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to earth, and he was given the key to the shaft of the bottomless pit. He opened the shaft of the bottomless pit, and from the shaft rose smoke like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened with the smoke from the shaft. And then from the smoke came locusts on the earth, and they were given power like the power of scorpions of the earth. They were told not to harm the grass of the earth or any green plant or any tree, but only those people who did not have the seal of God on their foreheads. They were allowed to torment them for 5 months, but not to kill them. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it stings someone. And in those days, people will seek death and not find it. They will long to die, but death will flee from them. Which, strangely, is something I used to threaten with my kids with, actually, that they would seek death. But anyway, that was some pretty poor parenting on my part. But anyway, let's pull that back for a second. So, Bud, right away, you see, I mean, in the very first sentence, you're seeing, like, lots of imagery. And it starts off with this star falling from heaven to earth, and he was given the key to the shaft of the bottomless pit.
Yeah, and everybody you read, Steve, will say, don't get too dogmatic in chapter 9. Mm. This star that falls from heaven to earth, and who has the key to the bottomless pit, there are probably 5 or 6 different interpretations as to what that star could be. Mm. Be anywhere from an evil thing, like the star being Satan, or one of the demons. It can be, some of them think it's the gospel. Torrance thought it was the gospel coming to the earth. And some think it could be Christ himself. It could be Jesus coming to the earth. But the important thing then, if we're not going to try to identify the star, the important thing to do then is to ask what the star is doing. So the fifth angel blows his trumpet. The star, which we usually will say is an angelic being, right? Because mm-hmm. several times stars have been angelic beings in this, right?
Right.
Other times stars could be heavenly bodies, which actually they are in a minute here. But so some angelic being is going to come, and he's going to go, and he's going to open up the bottomless pit, okay? And he's got a key to the shaft. So it's an image of a huge pit with a little shaft going down.
Yeah.
And an angel with a key that's going to open it up. When he opens it up, smoke's going to come out of the pit. So this is different now than the the first four were events happening on the earth. The fifth one now is a satanic thing that's happening. You're opening up the pit. Smoke is coming out of the pit. This seems like evil, right? Smoke, okay. And it darkens the sun and the air from the smoke of the shaft. So it's very much a satanic thing that's happening. Satan being loosed for a little while. You want to be very careful about that because people put that to the end of time. Satan being loosed for a little while, but this is God allowing evil. He is still totally in control.
Yeah,
his angel has the key, but he's allowing this to come.
Yeah, because they're time limited, right? Because they were only allowed to torment them for 5 months, but also not allowed to kill them too, right? So.
Yeah, very limited in what they can do. The demons are only they're like dogs on leashes. Although my daughter likes dogs, so you can't do that. You know.
Yeah. Okay. wild cats on leashes. but I know what you mean.
Or some bad animal on a leash. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cows on leashes. If you want to go back,
and then,
to the far side, imagery.
So, is there anything in this imagery other than, you know, because then in three he goes on to the smoke came then from the smoke came locusts on the earth, and they were given power like the scorpions of the earth. Was that something that was he trying to say something with all this imagery of locusts and the faces that they had and all this kind of stuff?
Well, if we jump from here and we jump down to seven and read that and then come back, that might help us a little bit.
Sure, let's do that.
Okay.
Seven,
eight, and nine, I think.
Seven, eight, nine, I got it. In appearance, the locusts were like horses prepared for battle, and on their heads were what looked like crowns of gold. Their faces were like human faces, their hair like women's hair, and their teeth like lions' teeth. They had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the noise of their wings was like the noise of many chariots with horses rushing into battle.
Okay, so in verse number three, it's locusts that are going to come out of this smoke, right?
Yeah.
And then in verse number seven, the locusts are described for us. Now, and the reason I wanted you to read that part was because in the 1970s, there was a guy named Hal Lindsey.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote a couple of books, Satan is Alive and Well on Planet Earth, I think he wrote, and The Late Great Planet Earth.
Ah, that's the one I know, The Late Great Planet Earth, yeah.
Yeah, and The Late Great Planet Earth was super popular in the 70s. This whole thing was really big stuff back then. They had a few movies, Distant Thunder and A Thief in the Night. These were the movies that were out, and they were all about Revelation. And in the book, he wrote that about these locusts, and he talked about modern warfare.
Hmm.
And I'm not going to see this at all in here, but what Hal said is he said these locusts were helicopters.
Hmm.
And so he said, you know, when you see helicopters and planes in modern warfare, and now he was talking modern warfare in the 70s, and then he would go back all the way back. To the Second World War, and he would talk about the planes and the helicopters, and people would paint faces and paint images on these planes, right? Memphis Belle had painted on it and on their bombs and stuff. And so he would say they would paint women's faces and women on the sides and their hair coming out on the sides. And he said, if you look at a helicopter, when they say these horses had faces like humans' faces, so when you look in the front of a helicopter, what do you see? You see the pilots.
Right.
And so the horses have faces like, or the locusts, I want to say horses, but that's a little bit later. The locusts have faces like humans. And he'd say, this is a helicopter going into battle. What do they have? Breastplates of iron. These are the iron on the front of the helicopter.
Oh, I get you.
Why do you get the noise like many chariots rushing into battle? Well, you know. That's exactly what they sound like. And he even goes further in some of the other places where they talk about them, and they talk about the fire and the smoke rising up to heaven. He talks about them burning on the battlefield. Now, in those days, they talked about, maybe they're making them out of some kind of new pressed wood. For some reason, they were talking about that in the 70s. But as we well know, you know, when a helicopter crashes or a plane crashes, you know, the fuel goes everywhere and it burns like crazy and the smoke rises up.
Right.
So that's the kind of thing that Hal Lindsey would say about these locusts going into battle. Now, there was another guy, and I can't remember who he was, but he talked about the way cartoons were coming out. And this was the time of Masters of the Universe and Transformers. And he honestly believed that these locusts were going to appear on the Earth, and that the comic book people were of Satan, and they were drawing these Masters of the Universe people and the Transformers to prepare us so that when we see these locusts come upon the Earth, that we won't be at all surprised by them, because we'll be so used to the imagery in the comics. Yeah, we can laugh at that one a little bit.
Yeah, I think we should laugh at that one a tiny bit. Yeah,
this guy is unidentified, so we can.
Yeah. Wow.
And I had a friend that back then, and our an acquaintance who really thought that with all of the DNA manipulation that was going on, they were going to create these locusts. And they were gonna come. But now if you go back to verse number 3, you say, out of the smoke comes a locust, and they're given the power of scorpions, right?
Yep.
And locusts are grass eaters. And in verse 4 it says, don't harm the grass or any plant or tree. And right. So locusts aren't gonna do what they're naturally given to do, which is to fly across and eat all the vegetation. They're actually going to only harm people, right?
Right.
And the power of a scorpion is, you know, they'll say later on, and the power of the scorpion is in his tail. And when you read about scorpions, you find out that most scorpions don't kill people. They might kill the very young or the very old who don't have the ability to fight off the poison. But the poison is fairly mild, and it just creates a great deal of pain for people.
Right.
And so it's very uncomfortable.
Right.
So what's happening now? These locusts, they're not harming the grass. And you were going to mention something about the grass again, of course.
Well, it's back. You know, like, hey, it was gone, and it's back again. Hey.
And the grass is back.
Get back, grass. Get back to where you once belonged.
Yeah, but then when you read it, you find out that the purpose here, of course, is to say that the locusts aren't touching their natural, I don't know if you can say prey when you're talking, but their natural food source. Yeah. They're going after people, and they're going after a specific people, and those are the people who don't have God's seal on their heads. Right,
which gives you doesn't that give you a sense that God's people are still around at that time too, right?
God's people are around. So where I see them as Christians, right?
Yeah.
If you saw a rapture in just before chapter 6, you got another possible rapture coming up in 11. But if you saw one before chapter 6, then these are tribulation saints, right? And if you're, or these are the 144,000 Jewish people, the Jewish evangelists upon the earth that are sealed. But I really see this as these are God's people. These locusts, they are tormenting. They're tormenting the non-Christian people on the earth.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Morris would say. This is all a very satanic thing. And as people have their way, they are tormented. Now, the locusts are allowed to torment people for 5 months. And 5 months is, you know what that is?
No, I have no idea.
That's the approximate lifespan of a locust.
Oh, hey, that's kind of cool. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, and five fits a few other things, but, and they're not allowed, they're told not to kill people, but just torment them like a scorpion torments them. So people are being tormented by these locusts and they are seeking death, but they're not finding death. They're going to long to die, but death will flee from them. And remember what's happening to the Christians before this. The Christians are being martyred. The Christians in chapter 5, they're under the altar crying out, how long? And God's saying, until the number that are going to die the way you die is fulfilled, and then I'm going to pour out my wrath. And here, he is pouring out his wrath, and people, again, are seeking death, but they're not finding it. And one of the guys I read actually points back to Paul, and Paul says in one place, He basically says, I'd rather die. Is it in Corinthians? He said, you know, I'd rather leave this world. I'd rather leave this tent, right?
Right.
But for your sake, I'm staying here. So Paul chooses life for his ministry in that passage. These people would long to see death rather than to have to live in the judgment of God.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. No, but that's that was an awesome explanation of that. So since we've read 7, 8, and 9,
yeah,
should I jump down to 10?
Yeah.
So folks, remember we talked about the locusts were horses prepared for battle. 10, it picks up again. They have tails and stings like scorpions, and their power to hurt people for 5 months is in their tails. And they have a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit. His name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek he is called Apollyon.
Yeah, so again in 10, he talks about the scorpion sting and the power to hurt people for 5 months. Probably a limited period of time. There's a lot of limitations put on, right? Yeah. And again, like you said, Steve, the limitation, even the demons, if this is satanic, even Satan and the demons are limited by God's control.
Right.
He gives them some freedom, but only some. And at the end of this chapter, you're going to find out part of the reason why that is. And these locusts that come out, these satanic locusts, it says their king is the angel of the bottomless pit. Hebrew Abaddon and Greek Apollyon. Abaddon is destroyer. And Apollyon, I just forgot now. It's like it's also destruction and destroyer. They're almost synonymous. Mm. Abaddon is in the Hebrew language and Greek, of course. Well, as it says, right? Apollyon is in the Greek language. Both talking about the destroyer. Both talking about, we believe, Satan. So these locusts that are attacking people are satanic.
Mm. Mm.
You know, so everybody who says, you know, I want to go to hell and you know, be with all my friends rather than go to heaven and be miserable, they're kind of missing it here.
Yeah.
And he is pointing out very strongly that even Satan can't do anything unless God gives him that little bit of freedom. And Satan, when he has that freedom, he can't attack God's people, so he actually attacks his own.
Right.
Which is
because God has limited him, right? So
yeah, and as long as he's attacking someone, he's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want me to go down 12 to?
Well, yeah. So 12 just says the first woe is past. Behold, two woes are still to come.
Yeah.
And then we're only going to get one.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So,
yeah, and it's kind of like that big pause in verse 12, isn't it? Like, hey, the first woe is past. Behold, there's two woes to come. It's like, if you think this is bad, there's two more cataclysmic things coming at these folks.
That's right. And oddly enough, the last one is the end of time. But this next one, there's also quite a bit of interpretive stuff going on. Now, do we go fairly fast through that last one, or are we fine?
I think we're good.
We're good. Okay, let's do 13 and 14 only.
Okay, cool. Then the sixth angel blew his trumpet, and I heard a voice from the four horns on the golden altar before God, saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, "Release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates."
Oh, maybe read 15.
Sure. So the four angels who had been prepared for the hour, the day, the month, and the year were released to kill a third of mankind.
Yeah. So the sixth angel blows his trumpet, and there's a voice from the horns of the altar. So altars, generally, they had the four sides of them.
Right.
And those are the four horns of the altar, right?
Okay.
Yeah, and so there's a voice from the altar of God, really. There's a voice from the altar of God and saying, release the four angels bound at the river Euphrates. And Euphrates is one of the major rivers, right? There's the Tigris and the Euphrates.
Right.
Some people think, but it's not really important here, but some people put the Garden of Eden right in there.
Okay.
Right in that, between the Tigris and the Euphrates, right in that area right there. And So anyway, he's saying release the four angels bound there. And these four angels are bound for the very hour and day and month and year to kill a third of mankind. And the most important thing I think in here is the absolute control over these four angels. Like how specific. There's two specific things that happen here. The timing is specific.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that he's actually very specific about the number of the troops that are going to come across. And so the timing is completely specific. God is holding them for this exact moment, right?
Mm.
Just like the coming of Christ was so very specific. It was an exact moment in history.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Even if Judas Iscariot sings, you should have been born, why were you born in such a backward time in such a strange land? God was quite specific about the coming of Christ for that very time.
Right.
And he's very specific about this as well.
Yeah.
Now, I always thought these angels were just angels, but someone made a very good point, and they said these angels are evil because they're bound.
Right.
Like, everywhere else, if they're good angels, God just grabs, hey, why don't you come on over and, you know, throw Satan in the pit.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, it really was like that, though, right?
He didn't pick anyone specific.
Off,
you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But these guys are bound. And so, like, Uriel was over Tartarus. And so you have angels over these angels that are bound. And the angels are also bound in the book of Genesis, right? In the book of Enoch, which is an alternate view of Genesis 6, there's angels bound in chains.
Okay.
And in Peter and Jude, they're in chains in everlasting darkness, right?
Okay.
Sometimes in Hades and sometimes Tartarus. And so these are these underworld places where the angels are bound. Well, these poor four guys here are held to this moment, and then they're released.
Yeah.
And they're released to kill a third of mankind, so a very specific number of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I probably talked too much about that and didn't talk in circles there, didn't I?
No, that's good, because it you know, you're drawing in all the other influences that John probably has been drawing on, and that would have been common understanding of the people he was writing to. And don't you think he was also trying to help those he's writing to, that God has actually appointed all these things down to the very hour? You know, to be that specific, he's trying to, I would assume he's trying to give them comfort about this is just how much God is in control of what's happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're walking out of your church and you don't know what's going to happen to you from one day to the next, which has happened all over the world in many times, right?
Yeah.
Like when we look at Russia today, I mean, things are stirring up a little bit again, you know, but when we looked at Russia in the, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, right, and 70s, back when the United States was having so much trouble with them, you know, in those days, if you were a Christian, you couldn't get a good job.
Right.
Right? You had to be a member of the Communist Party to go to university and get jobs. At least that's what I was told.
Yep.
And Christians, by their, you know, they had menial labor just because of their faith.
Yeah.
And those people needed to know that God is in complete control of what's going on.
Yeah.
And we need to know that, you know, even us who tend to do fairly well, we need to know that God's in control.
Yeah.
Now, the number that you gave, you were going to say something.
Well, no, I was just going to say, how far do you want me to read down from this point then, bud?
Well, let me finish this number.
Sure.
You did read that, didn't you?
I did not, actually.
Oh, read number 16.
16 says, the number of the mounted troops was twice 10,000 times 10,000. I heard their number.
Yeah, and I thought the number wasn't as specific, but Morris, not Steve Morris, but, you know, Leon Morris.
the learned one.
He said that this is that because he heard the number, and then he says it's 200 million, right? That's what it works out to. He thinks that number is quite specific, and that this 200 million troops was very specific. This is one thing, if it's 200 million and it's a specific number to John, this is one thing that makes it difficult to put it in the first century. Because nobody in the first century could come up with a with 200 million in their army.
That's right.
Now, there is one country that can come up with 200 million in their army.
Yes.
He would have told you back in the 70s was...
I'm going to guess China?
I'm gonna
or guess Russia?
I'm going to say China is correct.
Yeah, I think it's China. Yeah,
it yeah and a lot of people thought that China was going to come up with an army and come across, right?
Right.
Which, oddly enough, if you wanted to be literal and to push it that direction, you're still right. It's still China. And,
yeah.
And China is, has made an incredible resurgence on the scene, right? On the whole military economic scene. China has really become strong in the last decade or so, or at least that we've noticed in the last decade.
Right.
For quite a while. And so some people say that. It's you know, I don't want to say that. But they're the ones that can come up with the army. So
right.
so if you want an actual army, there you go. There they are. However, yeah. Verse 17 you're going to read.
Yep. And what? Should I read all the way down to 19? Kind of finish it off there?
Yeah, read down to 19. That'd be perfect.
Sure. And this is how I saw the horses in my vision, and those who rode them. They wore breastplates the color of fire and sapphire, and of silver, and of sulfur, and the heads... Yeah. And the silver surfer. No, that's not what I'm trying to say here. And of sulfur, and the heads of the horses were like lions' heads. And fire and smoke and sulfur came out of their mouths. By these three plagues, a third of mankind was killed, by fire and smoke and sulfur coming out of their mouths. For the power of the horses is in their mouths and in their tails, and for their tails were like serpents with heads, and by the means of them they wound.
And so now these horses, in my vision, and those who rode them, they're wearing their... The horses are the main thing because they just throw in those who rode them. Their breastplates are the color of fire and sapphire. So that's kind of like red,
yeah.
You know, for fire, reddy orange. Sapphire yeah. is blue.
Okay.
And sulfur is yellow. And nobody, right. nobody I read really knew. They just said, wow, those are really good colors.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like pretty fancy, you know, the tricolor that they had.
Yeah. Other than, yeah. Yeah, well, and I was going to say, other than sulfur, is typically associated with the pit too, though, right?
That's true. Yeah, yeah, and Hal Lindsey would talk about this. This looks a little bit like also the missiles that they shoot.
Oh,
and the horses' heads and the fire and smoke and sulfur come out of their mouths. So you know you're constantly shooting, and that's the whole idea behind the warfare. There, it is a warfare image, isn't it? And
yeah.
It is an image of destruction. The angel's going to kill a third of mankind. You know, you're in the middle of the Second World War. You're reading this and you're saying, man, I think that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I can see that. But for me, this is again, coming from God. God is controlling the process. Mm. And God is controlling what is happening on the earth here. So that is the most important thing for me.
Yeah.
If I want to be specific, I can't put it to the first century. Some say that this whole thing is pointing to Domitian in the first century. Mm. So you can still do that, but the numbers throw you off, right?
Right.
But like we said, you can't every time you start getting specific with the book of Revelation, it messes you up.
Yeah,
it'll embarrass you every time when you want to get really specific.
Mm-hmm.
So is there going to be a great army come across the Euphrates? I remember one time in the 90s, somebody speaking on this and saying, you know, they have enough weapons hidden in the caves to do an army of 200 million. Well, they'd be pretty outdated weapons by now.
Right.
You know, but, you know, better than slingshots maybe. But
yeah, yeah.
You know, and of course, the AK-47 did last for a very long time.
That's true. Such is true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but really, what are we talking about here? We're talking about cataclysmic events upon the earth. first century, second century, every century, these things have happened. And God being a part of all of this.
Right.
You know, and Satan having his way in people's lives and God using this to do what he's going to do in 20 and 21.
Yeah.
And so are you going to see something in the future? Man, you can make it happen if you want. It's there.
Yeah.
But the more important thing is to see the control that God has on this process and on people.
Yeah.
Right? And anytime you give people freedom, they go nuts.
Yeah.
Ultimate power corrupts ultimately. Absolutely.
Yeah.
How does that go?
Yeah. And you and I've actually seen that in person, people with freedom going nuts. But it's a great point that, again, he's giving hope to that church that he's speaking to and hope to us today that, yes, he is still in control. Bad things are about to happen, but I'm still God. I'm still sovereign.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and then I'll read 20 and 21 for us, because this is really, you know, makes your point in perfect ways of what John's trying to do or what God's up to here.
Yeah.
The rest of mankind, who were not killed by these plagues, did not repent of the works of their hands, nor give up worshiping demons and idols of gold and silver and bronze and stone and wood, which cannot see or hear or walk. Nor did they repent of their murders or their sorceries or their sexual immorality or their thefts.
And for me, this is the thing that ties it together, right? God allows Satan a little bit of freedom to do some stuff on the earth. But there's a salvific. I sure hope that's a real word. This is my second time using it.
Well, we're making it. It's a word now.
It's ours. We'll claim it.
Yeah.
There's a salvific person. Something in here. There's something of salvation in here.
There we go. Let's go with that.
Look what he says here. He says the rest of mankind who are not killed by the plagues don't repent. They're not giving up the works of their hands. They're not giving up worshiping demons. They're not giving up worshiping idols. They're not giving up their murders or sorceries or their immorality or their theft. So God's saying, what do I have to do to get a hold of these people?
Right.
Like, what do I have to do to get people's attention here?
Yeah.
I've tried the nice. I've tried the tough. I've tried this. Still, people don't care about me. And you know, and people will look at all of this stuff going on and they'll actually say, well, how could a gracious God allow this stuff?
Yeah.
How could a gracious God allow our people to be hurt like this for this period of time? How could he allow these terrible things upon the earth? And he's saying, I'm allowing it so that you'll turn to me.
Yeah. It has a purpose. It's not senseless suffering. It's purposeful.
Yeah, it's not just punitive; it's corrective.
Yeah.
And he wants people to come to him. Now, in the next chapter, he's going to have an interlude now before that goes chapter 10 and part of chapter 11, and then he picks up on the seventh trumpet, which is probably the end of time.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So, yeah.
Well, Larry, I mean, what a great way to kind of leave it there for this week, because really it hammers home again. John sees this vision because God is so desperate to bring, you know, humans back to him, and they refuse him. Some still refuse him. You know, he paints this dark picture of what he's going to do, and yet still they will reject him. So.
Yeah. And again, in the book of Revelation, when you try to get too specific with stuff, you start to stumble a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can see God's controlling hand in everything that's going on, you know, if we could live like that, Steve, we would live in complete freedom.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Yeah. If we could just simply enjoy that fact in our lives and just live it out, that'd be awesome. Yeah. Which I know I'm about to fail when I get up in the morning tomorrow, but anyway, you know, it is our lot.
It is.
Well, folks, that's what we got for this week. We're so glad that you came along on this journey for this week. Revelation 9, like Larry said, is this great turning point where where the locusts have come and he's calling calling the people of the earth again, and they've still rejected him. And it's Larry, thanks so much for just stepping us through that and showing us this image around it. And just like you said, you can't get so caught up in the specifics that you miss the greater vision that John's seeing. So folks, until next time, we will bid you adieu. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will see you in a short amount of time. Bye, everybody.